Welcome to a podcast of Beyond the Book, a presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. Copyright Clearance Center is the world's largest provider of copyright compliance solutions through a wide range of innovative licensing services and comprehensive educational programs for authors, publishers, and their audiences in academia, business, and research institutions. Become a fan of Beyond the Book on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to the free podcast and never miss a program at www.beyondthebook.com.
I'm very interested in speaking with our guest today, and on my right, Eduardo Mendoza. Eduardo Mendoza, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome, Smokanelli.
Eduardo Mendoza is a Spanish novelist born in Barcelona, where he lives today. He studied law in the first half of the 1960s. And between 1973 and 1982, worked as an interpreter for the United Nations. In 1975, he published his first novel, The Truth About the Savolta Case, which was considered to be a precursor to the novel of social change in post-Franco Spain, as well as a kind of a signal of the transition to democracy, a very important role. His other novels include The City of Marvels, published in 1986, as well as several novels that were published in installments in the newspaper El País, No Word from Gurb, and The Last Journey of Horatio Dos. So again, welcome, Eduardo Mendoza. And to his right, we have, from Madrid, now living in New York, Senior Eduardo Lago. Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for joining us here. Eduardo Lago was born in Madrid. He's a Spanish novelist, translator, and literary critic, but has lived here in the United States in Manhattan for more than 20 years. In 2002, he was recipient of the Bartolomé March Award for Excellence in Literary Criticism. And in 2006, he won the Premio Nadal, Spain's oldest and most prestigious literary award, for his first novel, which is called in English, Call Me Brooklyn. For many years, he's interviewed writers, so you've been in this position yourself many times, for the literary supplement in El País. He's currently director of the Cervantes Institute in New York and on leave from teaching Spanish literature at Sarah Lawrence College. And he's also a founding member of the Order of Finnegans. And as an Irishman myself, I'm intrigued by that. And if we have an opportunity, we might find out just what the Order of Finnegans is about. But because you're here to discuss the American allure and Spanish fiction, I want to ask you both to tell me about several identities that occur to me come up in this work. And they kind of break down, as I see it, three ways. There's the Spanish American, there's the Spaniard in America, and then there's an American from Spain. These are all sort of mutually overlapping identities, but each one still distinct. And each of you have had all of those experiences. How do you feel? Are you a Spaniard now in America? Do you feel American at all in any way?
Well, I think we are all Americans in some way, because we've been educated in the American entertainment industry, which is very powerful. I lived in New York for 10 years, which were very important for me. So I suppose I carry part of America in my DNA.
Sure. So how was that experience in New York, where you worked at the United Nations? How has that shaped your writing, would you say?
In a very important way. I was very fond of the American literature when I came, but I didn't realize what it was to be in America at the same time. I came from Europe in a decade where literature was a very serious and very boring thing. Experimental, the French literature, and so on. So I arrived in the States, and I discovered a very alive, diversified, varied kind of literature.
Well, I find that interesting because one thinks if there is a separation between a European attitude towards literature and the American, it would be, on the one hand, artistic, and on the other hand, commercialistic. But you came as an intellectual from Spain and were excited by the environment here.
Yes, yes, because I thought that the too artistic, too philosophical way of facing the literary fact in Europe was leading nowhere. While here, there was still this connection with the people, with the reader, with the normal reader, without giving up quality and interest in subjects and in the manufacturing of the literary product. And I thought that was very interesting and a good lesson for us, because we were in the practically suffocating ourselves in our lab.
I understand. Now, Senor Lago, how do you respond to that? Is that how you have felt as a Spanish writer in America for these many years? Are you excited by the opportunity here and by the culture here, or do you at all miss Spanish literary environment?
Well, for me, it has been a very interesting experience, and I have no great part in it, meaning that I never made any decision. New York City decided for me. I came here in 1985 to see how I felt about the city, and I realized right away that I wanted to live here.
I think that happens to a lot of people. They arrive in New York, and instantly they're a New Yorker.
Yes, yes. And a few weeks ago, during the Penn Festival, I was at a panel with a few writers who had been born abroad, but who live and work here. Salman Rushdie was one of them, and we were addressing the same topics. What I want to say is that after I was here for quite some time, something began to grow inside me, which was what was going to be my novel. It took 15 years for this novel to become real. The English title would be Call Me Brooklyn. But one day, like 3 years ago, I was taking part in the literary festival, and then they listed me as Eduardo Lago, Spain/US. I am not an American citizen. I'm Spanish national. I have my green card. But then I realized that they were stating the truth. I said, I'm part of this. Salman Rushdie said, if you spend 1 week in New York, you become a New York story. Only 1 week. They accept you as a New Yorker. And I think that this is very true. But there's another dimension of myself that I, as a writer, that I could see 1 year ago in Paris when my novel was translated into French. There's something very interesting about translations of literature in the United States, mainly the fact that very few authors get translated. My book has been translated into 13 languages. English is not one of them. Now, when I was in Paris, the reviewer said something about my novel which I considered to be true. He or she said, well, Eduardo is, or Mr. Lago, is not, has very little connections with the Hispanic tradition. He is an American writer writing in Spanish in New York, and that is the case. I didn't see it that way, but that is a fact.
So an American writer writing in Spanish
in New York.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions, and it addresses a point that I think the Global Market Forum that we're part of here at Book Expo is about, and that is, if it wasn't always the case, it's now obvious that Spanish is a global language, and a global language with a strong foothold in this country, where one thinks of English as being the other global language, too. Do you have thoughts on that, of Spanish as a global language, and as a writer, a responsibility to your Spanish audience, to your American audience potentially, and to this world audience of Spanish readers?
If we talk about that, we are not going to talk about our books. I think that it's a huge issue. I would like to say that for me it's a great honor being sitting here next to Eduardo Mendoza, who is an author that I read when I was beginning to become a writer, a secret writer though. So I think that he has a trajectory in a number of books. Let me be very brief about that, because it would be endless. Spanish is not a foreign language in the United States. It has never been. And that is the key to the strength that it has here. Just look at the names of places. California, Los Angeles, San Antonio.
Florida.
All of that. And it continues to be reinforced thanks to a continuous flux of immigration. Now, there's another factor which doesn't have to do only with numbers, which is that there is a higher quality of the culture in Spanish in this country, which was very low only 20 years ago when I arrived, and that is changing very rapidly. So there's a number of factors that have to do with that. And this country, I mean, the United States are going to be, sometime in the 21st century, the country with the largest number of Spanish speakers. That is going to situate it at the front, before Mexico. And now, so many things are happening with the Spanish that I would rather not begin to talk about them.
Okay. Well, let me turn to Senior Mendoza for a moment and ask you about one of the forms that you work in, which is the literary detective genre. And it strikes me that just as jazz is the native-born American music, you could make an argument that the detective novel is the native-born American form. How do you feel about that, and what appeals to you in that form?
Well, it is. I agree with you. And I remember when I began writing in the 60s, we were all great fans of the detective stories and the American detective stories.
Specifically the American ones.
Yes. And we thought that it was a way of doing many things at the same time, of writing good novels, entertaining novels, critical, etc. It was a very useful form, and it was a typical American.
Right. So it allowed you to do a lot of different things at one time.
Exactly. You are right. So I decided to adapt the Spanish literary tradition to the American detective novel.
Tell us what that meant exactly. I mean, one of the things about the detective novel that I see is that you have a character who goes between two worlds, the world of law and order, if you will, and the world of crime and disorder, and maybe one or the other or a bit of both in his own makeup. Did that appeal to you? And as a Spaniard, what elements of the Spanish experience kind of key in on that?
It appealed to me tremendously. I think the detective, by definition, is an outsider who gets into different worlds without belonging to any of them. At that time, many things were happening in Spain. It was changing very rapidly. It was at the end of the Franco dictatorship, the beginning of democracy. So a new society was being created just in 24 hours. So I thought it was very useful to have a character that was an outsider, as I felt myself at that time, because I was living in the United States and going to Spain to see what was happening. It was a world that was my world, but I was an outsider at the same time, and could just go around talking to people, seeing what's happening. So it was. I thought it was a very useful form of literature.
Now, Eduardo Lago, in your book, Call Me Brooklyn, the character is an outsider as well, but in a different way. Perhaps you can tell us about his origin story and the connections there that bring Spain and America together.
Well, I would like to say before that what Eduardo is saying is very true, in the sense that some of the best American writers, and some of them not at all commercial, like Dennis Johnson or Thomas Pynchon, their last novels are detective stories too, which is very interesting. In my case, it was a very long process, and it was truly a process of discovery, because it took me 15 years, more or less, to create the novel. And While I was discovering what I was trying to do, I found the true relationship between the two countries, that is just of my heart, Spain and the United States. And I found this in a moment that I was not expecting to address, which was the Spanish Civil War, at a moment when many people all over the world, but also here in the United States, felt that something very serious was happening in Spain that affected everyone, and they would not let it happen. They would not let happen that the ghost of fascism take over, as it happened. After that came Italy, and then the worst chapter of all, the Nazi regime. So here, a number of very young people from all over New York became volunteers who went to fight, and in many cases, die in the Spanish Civil War.
In what was called the Abraham Lincoln Brigade.
Exactly.
And there's a heroic aura around the Abraham Lincoln Brigade more than 60 years later now, I think. And yet, that's a long time ago. Can you address that? I mean, what has changed and what remains in that experience and that special bond that developed between the Spanish and the Americans at that moment?
Well, the fight for freedom, I think that it was a universal thing. But for me, it was a historical link that was like there for me to take. Because while I was looking for a connection, I found the connection in the most profound way, which is an ethical and aesthetical way. They still get together. They are going to have their celebration one of these days here, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade in Manhattan. They get together. Very few of them are alive these days. But 2 or 3 years ago, there was a wonderful exhibition here, which was titled Facing Fascism, New York and the Spanish Civil War. And it's very moving what they display there. There's a beautiful catalog.
Right.
So I think it's one of the great stories of our time, when people don't think only about themselves in terms of nationalism, but for, you know, universal justice.
Right. And you know, when we speak about the American allure, and not just for Spanish fiction, but for so many in a kind of mythical way, it's about this notion of freedom. Freedom of expression, particularly important for writers, obviously. Senor Mendoza, you experienced censorship and left either right at the moment you were being censored or in anticipation of that to come to this country, I presume, to be able to write what you wanted to write.
The absence of freedom is something that when you experience that, you experience it in every aspect of your life, not only in writing. Of course, you when you write, you know that somebody is going to censor what you are, and this is a very unpleasant sensation, but it also affects all other aspects of your life.
Can I ask you, for those who might not be familiar with some of the early work, what was it in the books that was going to offend the authorities?
Nothing, because we all knew that there was a censorship and that nothing would pass if it was offensive. Anyway, censorship was an institution that an end in itself. So you have to submit your work, and they decided to censor something just to justify their own salaries and their own existence, and especially to create this idea that there was something looking from above your shoulders. So be careful, because we are always watching you. This was difficult to live with. Not because I wanted to say something especially aggressive against anything. I just wanted to write a novel, but this was a very painful sensation. Anyway, what I found here was a freedom in all aspects of our life. And it was really a great experience, and I will say a shocking experience, because I had been born in a dictatorship. When I was here, I was 30 years old, and I had never been outside this. But I had traveled around, but I had never lived outside this watching state. So the impression of living in complete freedom, with all the good things and all the bad things. Everything was accepted.
Right.
It was important, I think, in my life.
Senor Lago, how do you feel about that subject, the notion of censorship and the sort of lack of censorship that leads ultimately to an inability to get attention for some important issues sometimes?
Well, my favorite quote in Don Quixote is at the beginning of chapter 53 of the second part, when Don Quixote says to Sancho, "Sancho, freedom is the most precious of gifts that can be bestowed upon humankind, and the lack of freedom, the worst of evils," in a very beautiful way, which I cannot quote right now. So I think it's a universal thing. Something very special is going on here, particularly in this city, more than in America at large. And I think that there have been fluctuations, and I wouldn't like to idealize America necessarily. I remember in one of my interviews having a conversation with Norman Mailer when the United States were about to invade Iraq. He wrote that book about the war. And those were moments where freedom was at stake here. But I think that there's something, for me, although there have been bad moments in this country, I think that there's something very profound about the belief in democracy in the contemporary sense. And for me, the true America, the America that can never die, is the America of Walden, of Thoreau, the America of Walt Whitman, and that can never be kidnapped. So I think that when we talk about freedom and differences between certain regimes in Europe or here, I think that this is a very special place in terms of freedom, but we're talking about something universal.
Right. Now, in your book that I'm familiar with, Call Me Brooklyn, Brooklyn is a character in a fashion. There are real places. There's a bar, pub. Perhaps you can tell us about that. It's a real place, although I believe I saw an interview that said you don't know that if anybody who ever goes to that bar even knows you wrote such a book about them. Yeah. Why make Brooklyn so central to the book?
Well, I was living in Brooklyn at the time. When I arrived in New York, the first places where I lived were all of them located in Brooklyn. I think I've lived in like 15 different locations in different neighborhoods. And it was in the year 1988 where I used to go to this bar, which was founded by a Spaniard who came here way before the Civil War. And there was a meeting place for sailors. There had been an original location near the harbor. Then the harbor moved, and this place is located somewhere in Brooklyn that I don't want to disclose. And it was there where I would have conversations every night with the owner. And the moment he saw me, he came to me and he began to tell stories. And I became friends with everyone in the bar. And they were mostly sailors from all over the world, Danish, many of them. And there were histories that covered decades. So little by little, the book took shape by itself. I only invented, very slowly, the two main characters. The rest are real characters. And I sometimes go there. I once went there with a journalist because my book was awarded the National Critics Award, and he wanted to do the interview there with all the paraphernalia about sailing, and he was going to tell them why we were there, and I said, don't tell them anything, they have no clue who I am. And I go there twice a year, I speak with them, I shake their hands, have a beer, and they don't know that I wrote a book based on their place, which is a very interesting place, because in the upper floor, they used to be, they rented rooms, and I didn't know this, but Frank McCourt, in his third book, I was at the Madrid Book Fair, and a critic said to me, have you read Frank McCourt's last book? And I said, no. He said, look at page 225, and he said, at the time, I had rented a room in the upper part of the so-and-so, who was a bar owned by Spaniards. And I was in shock because that's exactly what my character did, but I thought I had invented it.
Well, leave it to an Irishman to rent a room above a bar, but to make a point about cities and locations as characters, we mentioned in your bio that you are a founder or an important member of this organization, the Order of Finnegans, which I believe celebrates every June 16th what's called Bloom's Day, and that's the day, of course, that is the date of the events in Ulysses. And in that celebration and in that book, Dublin is as much a character as Bloom and all the others. So do you feel that you were echoing the place that Dublin had in Ulysses in your own work by choosing Brooklyn?
It could be, but it would be in an unconscious way, so I'm not aware of that. What I would like to say is that I think that if there is a history of the novel that we could sum up very quickly, I would say that the beginning is Cervantes and the end is James Joyce. And I think that there is a lesson from James Joyce that after what he wrote, after Ulysses, you cannot remain, you know, indifferent. He makes you make very important decisions and challenges. Ulysses is an extremely important book for me, and Eduardo knows this, and I spent very long hours analyzing the text, and I suffer this mental sickness that consists in that I have the need to celebrate Ulysses, and a group of crazy writers from Spain get together and go to Dublin every Bloomsday. We began 4 or 5 years ago. And we call it the Order of Finnegans, which has nothing to do with the book by James Joyce, which is a crazy book that I happen to love. Finnegans is a great pub in the city of Dalkey. So we go to the Martello Tower, and we walk from there, and we end up in the Finnegans pub in Dalkey. We have our pints there, except for one of us who cannot drink by medical prescription, and that's the origin of the order.
Well, it sounds like a good time. Now, if I can turn to Eduardo Mendoza for a moment. Barcelona plays an important role in your novels, and have you any response to the Brooklyn of Eduardo Lago and how there may be a similar role for Barcelona in your books?
I think that my stay in New York was decisive in my treatment of Barcelona. When I came to New York in the early 70s, New York was considered a very dangerous city, seen from Europe. Nobody wanted to come here. When I told them that I was coming to New York, they said, "Oh, we are sorry, we'll never see you again," etc. Because they thought that as soon as you put your you arrived in Kennedy Airport, you were immediately mugged and raped
and
everything. and I was really terrified when I arrived here, but I wanted to come. So I saw the New York City changing, not so much changing as a city, but the perception of the city seen from outside. So when I went back to Barcelona, something similar, in a different way, but very similar, was happening in Barcelona. It was a provincial city, practically unknown, and then suddenly it became a fashionable place, and the city where everybody had to go, and movies were being shot there, and so on. So I the experience of my staying in New York and seeing this change as a foreigner, as a New York foreigner, this category that Eduardo Lago defined so well, that you are a New Yorker as soon as you get here. You don't need to get marked to become a New Yorker. And I applied this experience to Barcelona because I could see what was happening, something that people from Barcelona couldn't see at that time because they didn't know what was happening. And I said, yes, you'll see, it will happen the same thing in a different way that happened to New York. And that's what I tried to tell in my novels.
That's fascinating because... it was a kind of a baptism for you and a kind of a rebirth. And there's again a myth associated with coming to America of recreation and rebirth, as I say. Did either of you feel that when you came here, you could begin again, you could begin anew your lives?
Yes. Yes, because my feeling was that New York was a city in the making. That I was arriving here and everybody was arriving here at the same time. So you were not a foreigner, you were part of this strange process called New York, where everybody was himself or herself and part of a common endeavor that was creating a city or a non-city or a spaceship, whatever. But something that you participated in that, something that didn't happen if you went to Paris or London or Moscow, where you are somebody who came there and they have their own society, but you're not part of it.
Eduardo Lago.
You said something that is really very important for me because I couldn't define it otherwise. Rebirth is right. That's exactly how I feel. I decided to stay forever in 1987. And that year for me has acquired a symbolic level in many ways. And I don't think I would be a writer had I not decided to stay in New York. I had a complicated relationship with Spain because I felt suffocated, not for political reasons, because I was 19 when Franco died. So, well, when I was a student, we fought all of us that. But no, on the contrary, I experienced the joy of freedom, the explosion of freedom that succeeded at the end of the dictatorship. But for me, arriving in New York, and I mean New York specifically, I see that as a rebirth. Exactly.
Well, I've enjoyed chatting with both Eduardo Lago and Eduardo Mendoza. Thank you both indeed for a great discussion about Spanish fiction and the American allure. I want to give an opportunity to members of the audience to ask a question if they have one. So I'm going to come down to the audience, and if you have a question, please raise your hand and tell us who the question would be for. And if you want to say if you're from a publishing house or where you're from, you're more than welcome to. But do we have any questions at all? No questions at all. Well, I want to thank you both, indeed. I hope somebody comes up and... Oh, wait a minute. See, that's what happens. Hang on.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. And I would like... I, as a young person living in New York, and you having known the city for so many years... What are your impressions of New York today and New York at the time when you came here and you lived here? And also why we tend to idealize this past in a way?
Well, since I was here before that, Eduardo Lago, I will answer first. New York is changing tremendously. Every time I come, I see a new city. But at the same time, I recognize everything because change is part of the city. So I wouldn't recognize New York if it was stuck in the past.
You only recognize it because it's different.
Hmm?
You're saying you only recognize it because it's different.
Yes, because it's changing, because nothing is staying. Not that something new is being created, but something old is being left aside for something, which is the opposite that happens in Europe. In Europe, all the cities consider that they have to cherish and take good care of their past, because the present is bad and the future will be worse. It's the opposite that's happening here. I think that they believe that whatever they do will be better than what their parents did, which is true.
Eduardo Lago, how do you feel about that? Because you are here throughout.
Yeah, I think that New York has changed a lot. And I'm going to say something strange. I miss the danger. I was mugged in New York, in Brooklyn. And not that I like that, but I think that something that was very The true character of the city is somehow gone. At the same time, I believe that there's something that never changes in New York. I don't like the way Times Square and the surroundings look like. In my novel, I write about Hell's Kitchen, which was a very different place. Brooklyn has changed a lot. Red Hook, Coney Island, which is still there with the ghosts. So I think that New York has changed a little bit for the worse in general, but there's something deep inside, which is its spirit, that I think is going to take over sometime soon again.
Okay, thank you. A question.
Hi, this question is for both of you as well. And I wanted to know if you think there's a new literary city that is fascinating for writers in Paris, New York, and now, I don't know, probably Barcelona. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Is there any other city that would inspire you? Not them, or for writers today. Maybe.
John Steinbeck wrote, after living in New York, no place is good enough.
That's definitive. Eduardo Mendoza, how do you feel?
Well, I've lived in several cities. Because of my other job I I had then, I left New York. I went back to Spain, but I could not live out of my book. So I went doing my job, which was an interpreter, in different places. And I spent sometimes a long period in Vienna, which is the opposite of New York, exactly the opposite of New York. And I fell in love with Vienna too. I'm promiscuous with cities. But I kept the same love for New York and for Barcelona, everything. And I think that this big contrast in cities is very interesting, I love cities. I love cities. I don't want to appear as a propagandist of New York. It is true that, as we said, that we were reborn here, but the fact of being born is not necessarily a happy experience. So it's better than not being born, which is boring. But, many bad things happen to you as soon as you get born. But I think that this sensation given by cities, by big cities, it's important.
All right, indeed. Well, thank you again, Eduardo Lago, for joining us from Manhattan, and Eduardo Mendoza for joining us from Barcelona. Thank you both. My name's Chris Keneally.
Thank you very much.
Beyond the Book is an educational presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center, with conferences and seminars featuring leading authors and editors, publishing analysts, and information technology specialists. Beyond the Book is the premier source for knowledge on the latest business issues facing today's dynamic publishing industry, from initial research to final publication and beyond.